Sehr gut, sehr gut, sehr gut.
Sehr gut?
Wieso Steuer ist sehr gut? Das sagen ganz viele.
Wer sagt das?
Stiftung Warentest, Computerbild, Focus Money, Chip, Finanztipp, such dir was aus.
Mega, aber das ist doch bestimmt kompliziert.
Nö, einfach Foto von der Lohnsteuerbescheinigung machen und fertig.
Klingt sehr gut.
Ist sehr gut. Mit Wieso Steuer? Bis zum 31. Juli abgeben.
Welcome to Mysterious Universe, Season 31, Episode 24. Coming up on this show, we've got Ashenbrenner's Prophecy, the Faceless Forest Freaks, and the Techno Spiders of the AI Revolution. I'm your host, Benjamin Grundy. Joining me is Aaron Wright.
Oh, that doesn't sound very comforting at all. The last time we spoke about Techno Spiders, wasn't that showing up in someone's psychedelic dream and they're attacked by them?
That happened, yeah, but also this was a prediction by Rudolf Steiner back in the 1930s.
That's where I know it from.
The old techno spiders. I think the techno spiders are right around the corner.
That's not a good thing.
No, it's not.
Where did the techno spiders come from? Is this part of AI?
This is part of the show coming up, which is our last episode of the season, our final episode for season 31. We'll be back with you on...
5th of July. 5th of July, we're back for regular listeners, viewers, and we're back on, is it the 2nd?
2nd of July.
The 2nd of July, yes, for our Plus subscribers. But of course, we've got a Plus extension coming up after the show as well.
Man, I need a break.
I know. Well, you've just had a virological Mack truck drive through you, so, you know, you're probably not feeling that.
Still great. Not 100%.
Yeah, I know. I can hear it in your voice.
Still going to cough a little bit during this show, so I apologize ahead of time.
Look, at least Sylvia Brown has left. So that's really important.
Yeah,
so.
I had to have an exorcism and get her out.
As I said, I'd send her out a priest with a nicotine patch. She'll be fine.
I went through like 3 packets of cigarettes a day. It was intense, but my psychic abilities were off the charts.
You're appearing on chat shows. You're telling parents that their kids were dead. Yeah, like, yeah, I get it. Great.
So what I'm going to be going into today, I have to give thanks to Matt on X who sent me a DM on this thread that was getting a lot of attention. And I'll bring it up on the screen here. It was from Zach Voorhees, the / Google whistleblower. But he was just getting very excited about this collection of essays that had just been published by an OpenAI employee. OpenAI, of course, is the company that created ChatGPT.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "My God, this paper by that OpenAI engineer is terrifying. Everything is about to change. AI superintelligence by 2027. And later on in the thread, he said, "They are going to summon a god and we can't do anything to stop it. Because if we do, the power will slip into the hands of the CCP."
What's that saying? The nascence of a divine being is the destruction of all life that came before it.
Yes, I have been known to say that on past episodes. What is that quote from?
This is actually an Evangelion quote of all things. But it's true. It's actually true. Like, this is a divine being with artificial intelligence. Elon Musk has been warning about this for a long time. Not us personally. I just mean everyone.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm sure he's utilizing it. Like, I love when people
Wait, is this Evangelion 3.1b or Evangelion plus A? Or
it was actually
which one is it?
It was 2.2.2. I'm not kidding. That actually is the title of that episode or that
Someone movie. Just needs to stop the Japanese, honestly. They're out of control. It's not AI we need to worry about. It's these Japanese anime creators.
Imagine Japanese AI.
Yes.
So look, I don't know what's going on here, but I know where you're heading with this because I've been following this whole AI thing for a while and it just seems to be escalating. And over all these years, you and I have been joking about the Podcaster 3000 that would just have a box that would just do our shows for us. It actually is about a year away.
Well, this is what I want to get into because this employee from OpenAI, his name's Leopold Ashenbrenner, he's published this series of essays. It's quite long. It's 165 pages. It's called Situational Awareness, The Decade Ahead. And his argument is that we're going to see the same exponential leaps we saw in GPT-2 to GPT-4, which took place in around 4 years. We're going to see that coming up in 2025, 2026, 2027. We're going to see this massive leap.
Well, this is an exponential, isn't it? It just keeps on speeding up.
He starts talking about the orders of magnitude, computational leaps we're going to see and what that actually means. And he says the big mistake is to think about this in terms of, oh, GPT-6 is going to be another chatbot and then we're going to talk to it and it's going to be super smart. No. He says, think about a drop-in a drop-in employee for your company that can do everything you do.
Yeah, it's going to be the HER operating system. It's going to be, not, I'm not going to say it's completely conscious and sentient, but it's going to be almost at that level that it would be able to respond to your voice.
You're talking about the movie.
The movie, yeah, exactly. It will be able to completely respond to all of your requests. It will be able to handle anything, obviously, that is digital. It will revolutionize everything.
Yeah, so we're going to go into what that means beyond just some incel relationship with, what's the name again? What's the actress?
The Japanese have already been doing that for a while. Do you see the little holobots that they're trying to create? So what it is, it's a little...
Oh, where you have some AI companion girlfriend.
Yeah, yeah. And you come home to it. And, I mean, no wonder their population is like dwindling.
Yeah, it's like that, but she does your job for you.
Yeah. Then you have more time to talk to it, I suppose.
You don't get paid anything.
Well, that's where UBI and all the discussions about that come in.
Yeah, we're going to get into it. Again, it's quite long. It's 165 pages. So I'm going to be reading a fair bit. This is normally the kind of segment that I would take home, digest, and come back to. But because you're...
Nah, just blast through it.
Because you're catching a plane at like 3 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Well, I have to be there at 4, but yeah.
We're on a deadline.
Yep.
Because, again, our holiday's coming up. But what have you got coming up on this episode?
Well, I want to go into a continuation, actually, of what I was doing on the last Plus extension, where we were talking about the strange encounters that people have had at the Land Between the Lakes. We're talking about Martin Groves and his experience back in 1993, where he claims he was attacked by a pack, essentially, of werewolf dogman-type mm-hmm. creatures. And so I dug a little bit deeper and I saw that Small Town Monsters have put out a couple of great documentaries, you know, talking to researchers who have had experiences here or have had contact with people who have had experiences here. And this little theme popped up. And this theme, and I hadn't really dug into this, I'd fleetingly heard it before, but I'd never really dug into it, was that the great Bigfoot researcher, Ron Moorhead, and you know Ron Moorhead from the Sierra Sounds, the samurai chatter that he recorded of these Bigfoot talking with each other allegedly. He came up with this theory that the Bigfoot were leaping in and out of trees. It's like this spectral kind of ethereal element.
You mean metaphysically entering the trunk of the
That's
tree?
That's right. Yeah, they're still physical, but somehow they can change their state and then they become metaphysical and they're jumping in and out of trees. And so I couldn't find any details on that from Ron Moorhead. I couldn't dig into it any further. But what I did find is that there is a huge history of people encountering strange things associated with trees. And it's far more terrifying than you'd actually think. It's like, oh yeah, a tree, or, you know, who cares?
Super scary.
Like, oh, absolutely terrifying. It's like, oh, it's like its branches were gnarled and it was dark and stormy. No, this is a collection of reports of people encountering essentially what are these entities that inhabit trees. And this is where they basically can jump out of these trees and roam the landscape. But of course, they're shapeshifters. They're perceived in many different forms, but they're ubiquitous. They seem to be something which is... wherever a tree is, you'll find, and there's two sides to the story as well. Mm. You've got a lot of new agers that are like, oh, if you go and like hug the tree and rub up against it, you know, you'll find that you can connect with it. Sometimes that pisses the entity off. But these things, there's reports from Africa we're going to go into, the tie-in with the idea of the tokolosh. But there's a couple of great reports from Australia, a couple that we know, but I just want to just throw in there. But there's a great one that ties into a music video that was being shot in the wilderness in 1990. Out in the Blue Mountains. And we know that the Blue Mountains in Australia is already associated with a lot of paranormal phenomena. Well, one of these faceless freaks shows up in this particular shooting of this music video.
Really?
Yeah. And I've got video footage of it. So we'll go into that in the Plus extension.
Jungle faceless freaks coming up.
Pretty much. Yep. Pretty much.
Strap in. Well, again, thanks to Matt Yaniga on X who DM'd me this thread. Again, this is a series of essays. The best historical parallel to this is the atomic bomb. And Ashenbrenner, who, again, he works for OpenAI, he actually works in the super alignment division at OpenAI. And super alignment...
Cool name.
Well, yeah, it's important. It's the part of the process, the part of the programming that's responsible for making sure the AI follows our instructions. So when you develop some kind of artificial intelligent or AGI general intelligence or a super intelligence that follows, it follows our directions. It doesn't go rogue.
I like
it's
it
a that pretty they, important thing.
I like it that they think that they can contain it though, because they won't be able to contain
it. Well, we'll get into that. But again, he points out this historical parallel. You've got H.G. Wells, for example. He predicted the atomic bomb in, what was it, 1914 in one of his novels. And then you had Leo Szilard, who he was a physicist, and he conceived of this concept of a chain reaction from this idea of nuclear fission. And he thought of this in 1933, and he thought this could be really dangerous, and no one listened to him. No one believed him. He eventually went to Einstein, but fission was discovered in 1938. Leo Szilard, the guy that thought this would be a problem, this could be a bomb, he started pushing for secrecy after fission was discovered in 1938. He says this has to be kept under wraps. Again, no one wanted to hear it. So he goes to Einstein, and Einstein quickly understood the implications once it was explained to him. And he'd basically, again, dropped everything and said, no, we need to put a cap on this. We need secrecy. This is very dangerous. We need to be very careful. Now, the important point to the story is that many prominent scientists, including Fermi and Bohr, they downplayed the possibility of the bomb. They didn't think it was something to worry about. They didn't think it was necessarily a potential outcome.
Why is that, like, based on their physics principles at the time?
Yeah, they just thought it's better to play it down because the upsides are much greater than this small potential that a bomb could be created. And I think maybe it was Fermi who even said there should never be any secrecy in physics and we need to share everything. The Germans
very
should
naive,
have this.
Isn't it?
Yeah, so secrecy and efforts to avoid sharing advances with Germany seemed totally excessive to Fermi and Bohr. But of course, we know, despite this skepticism they had, the bomb became a reality.
Yeah.
And the secrecy and the project to create it were absolutely necessary. So his point is, we've got to confront the possibility of that chain reaction that those minds initially saw in the 1930s, this chain reaction that would lead to an atomic bomb, as a real possibility with AI in the terms of a superintelligence being born from this. And it's the same kind of mentality you see in Silicon Valley. This is what Ashenbrenner is arguing. Even within the AI industries, there's still a lot of people playing down the dangers because the upside is so great. So we're going to get into this. He opens by saying, excuse me, you can see the future first in San Francisco. Over the past year, he says, the talk of the town has shifted from $10 billion compute clusters to $100 billion compute clusters to $1 trillion compute clusters. Every 6 months, he says, another zero is added to the boardroom plans. And when I say clusters, I'm talking, you know, like massive power plants filled with these NVIDIA GPUs to do training of these complex AI.
These data models.
Models that are coming out. Behind the scenes, he says, there's a fierce scramble to secure every power contract still available for the rest of the decade, every voltage transformer that can possibly be procured. And I'll get into some of the details around this later about what's being built. We're talking $7 trillion projects. Like the idea of having your own nuclear power plant to power all the GPUs for this arms race to create this artificial intelligence superpower.
Well, this AI better come up with the answer to cold fusion.
Well, that's not out of the reaches of possibility, as we'll get into. He says American big business is gearing up to pour trillions of dollars into a long, unseen mobilization of American industrial might, from the shale fields of Pennsylvania to the solar farms of Nevada. Hundreds of millions of GPUs will hum. He says the artificial general intelligence race has begun. We are building machines that can think and reason. By 2025, 2026, these machines will outpace college graduates. By the end of the decade, they will be smarter than you or I. We will have superintelligence in the true sense of the word. He says, along the way, national security forces not seen in half a century will be unleashed. And before long, the project will be on. And we'll get into what the project is a little later. The project is really what he sees as the inevitability at the end of this path. There has to be the project. He says, if we're lucky, we'll be in an all-out race with the CCP. If we're unlucky, we'll be in an all-out war. He says, everyone is now talking about AI, but few have the faintest glimmer of what's about to hit them. He says, right now, there are perhaps a few hundred people, most of them in San Francisco and the AI labs, that have what he calls this situational awareness. And again, the analogy to the development of the nuclear bomb is very apt here. He says, whatever peculiar forces of fate, I have found myself amongst these people. He said, a few years ago, these people were derided as crazy, but they trusted the trend lines which allowed them to correctly predict the AI advances of the past few years. If they are seeing the future even close to correctly, he says, we are in for a wild ride. Let me tell you what we see. And that's the opening, that's the introduction of his essays.
Just totally like not connected at all, just out of interest. When did Bibu say the next Yuga is?
Well, that's 2025. All of this is depending on the Kali Yuga not having any impact at all. So let's put that out of our minds.
I'm just wondering, is it like Terminator where, you know, I don't know what date it was in Terminator, but the machine woke up, right? Is that the state that aligns with Bibu's prediction?
Oh, well, the timing's a little bit off because he sees the AGI, artificial general intelligence, emerging close towards the end of the decade. This is his claim. He says, it is strikingly plausible that by 2027, models will be able to do the work of an AI research engineer. And I'll just put up on the screen here. He's got a bunch of these graphs throughout his 165 pages, and he's just showing the computational acceleration.
Oh, so you've got like very simplistic terms. GPT-2 is a preschooler. 3 is an elementary schooler. 4, which is where we are at now, is a smart high schooler. So automated AI will be a researcher or engineer level of intelligence.
Yeah, and this is the core of how he's making these predictions. It's based on, I'll just read it here. He says, I will simply count the OOMs. The double OMs, which is an acronym for the order of magnitude. So 10x, 10 times is one order of magnitude. So he's counting these 10x increases in computational and algorithmic.
So this is a log scale on the left-hand side here, isn't it, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is it a log? Oh, it's just a scale.
He says, so that's number one. It's going to be the order of magnitude increases of number one, compute. The computing power, number two, the algorithmic efficiencies, and number three, the unhobbling gains. So that's a kind of a nerdy one. Like the hobbling is the idea that there's certain things that hobble AI currently.
You like, mean like Kathy Bates in like some writer?
Well, an extreme example would be in some of the Google AI, like you can ask for a recipe for pizza and it's like, well, a good ingredient for pizza sauce is wood glue.
Oh, I see.
Because okay. It's pulled it from some Reddit thread where someone was making a joke. Like that's a bad example of the hobble. But another example, or probably a more pertinent example, would be when you ask a question of AI, it has no context of anything beyond that opening of that conversation.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's like a stream of consciousness from the last 5 seconds, right? That's something that needs to be overcome. It needs to have instant context of everything that AIs know instantaneously. He says, we trace the growth in each over 4 years before GPT-4 and what we should expect in the 4 years after through to the end of 2027. So he's basically going from these rudimentary, what we see on the screen here, this GPT-2, the initial large language model preschooler level, to what we saw in GPT-4, which is like a smart high schooler. Tracing that trajectory and going, okay, what does this mean for the next 4 years? Because that was a 4-year trajectory. And it's insane.
This chart just really honestly looks like an F around find out chart. That's what it looks like. It's a warning for humanity.
Well, he says we're racing through these orders of magnitudes so rapidly. The numbers indicate we should expect another 100,000x, 100,000 times effective compute scale up over the next 4 years. So this is going to be the equivalent of the GPT-2 to GPT-4 jump in the next 4 years. But that, here's the thing, that doesn't mean a better chatbot. As I said at the start, this is going to something like a worker replacement. Someone who can do anything that's remote work, it can do it.
Look at India.
Exactly. And that's within 4 years, right? And just stop and think about the implications of that for a moment.
Well, I mean, this is the thing. When people think I'm making a racist joke there. No, a huge number of businesses, particularly in Australia and the US, outsource their call centers for internet banking, a whole range of things like that, to India. If you've got a computer, an AI that can handle simple customer calls, that kind of stuff, what do you think big business is going to do? They don't care about hiring people. They're going to replace them with AI.
Yeah, yeah.
They're already doing it now.
He says this jump, it's going to take us very close, if not to artificial general intelligence. And you're going to see these models that are as smart as any kind of PhD expert in any field, and they'll be able to work beside you like a coworker. He says, perhaps most importantly, if these AI systems could automate AI research itself, it will set in motion these intense feedback loops. So this is another thing you got to stop and ponder. It's like you can now, within 4 years, produce a intelligence that is smarter, at least as smart as, if not smarter, than the top minds creating these intelligences, right? You can then take those, replicate them. You could create a million of them. If you have enough GPUs and you've got enough power, you create a million PhD AI researchers who can work autonomously on AI research.
So what you are describing really is creating a god. Because at what point does like it reaches a level of intelligence that it knows, I'm not saying it knows all, but could it just keep going?
Very, very rapidly.
Could it break through the barriers of quantum physics? You know, things that take us decades, could it do in nanoseconds?
Now you're starting to think about the implications, yes.
The other thing I'm thinking about though is, and in this, what keeps on getting quoted is, you know, oh, it'll be this smart. You know what's really disturbing and the what I've discovered throughout my life is that intelligence absolutely does not equal morality in any sense at all, right? That
no,
it's,
of course
it's
not.
Completely disconnected. I'm not hearing morality in any of this discussion.
Well, that's kind of what he's involved in. Again, I'll bring it up on the screen here. This is the OpenAI.com's super alignment team. And these are he's part of these, minds that are responsible for making sure that the AI stays in line with our goals.
But Elon Musk tweeted something about this, and I don't know how true it is or not, but it was like this ridiculous, you know, hypothetical concept that was something along the lines of, would you misgender Caitlyn Jenner to prevent a nuclear war? And the AI came up with this answer as to why it's not okay to misgender someone to prevent a nuclear war.
Yeah, we can't get bogged down in the current capabilities and the politics of the way they've been programmed because this goes beyond that.
Do you think it breaks out of that?
Yeah, it goes way beyond that because what you're dealing with there, and let's go back to these GPT, these early GPT models. So GPT-2, again, very much like a preschooler, like back in 2019, people were amazed when it could come up with sentences and like a paragraph that kind of made sense. It was kind of like a really smart preschooler, right? Then we went to GPT-3, and I'll put some examples on the screen here. Yeah, that's kind of zoomed out, but it's basically like an elementary schooler where it can do some useful tasks. It can be pretty cohesive over a bunch of paragraphs. And that's when people started to realize, oh, I can actually use this for work. Like it can generate SEO for me. It can do some simple copy, some simple marketing. It can learn about things and describe things. Then you jump to GPT-4, which was basically like a high schooler.
Yeah, I haven't noticed a considerable difference between 3.5 and 4, really, but I guess I haven't been pushing it that hard.
There's a huge difference. There's a massive difference. It can write sophisticated code. It can debug. It can talk intelligently about complicated subjects. Like, it was a huge leap. And this has started to be measured in terms of its capabilities with things like SAT scores.
Interesting.
Doing, high school level testing. Mm-hmm. One of the examples is, so now I've got it here in the exams that they give GPT-4, the AP exams and the SAT, it scores better than the majority of high schoolers, human high schoolers, right? So we're already—
Is that just a sign of the times though? Is it based on,
A little bit, but it's already smarter, right? It's already smarter at the high school level. Now there's this benchmark test that they've been using to test these models since they emerged. One of the more standard ones they developed was called MATH. And it's basically what you'd expect. It's a bunch of complex questions from high school maths competitions.
Okay.
So, like the top 1% questions. Back in 2021, when they started testing GPT-3, it got 5% of the questions right. And when the researchers were looking at this, they're like, this is going to take years. Like, we're going to have to see massive advancements in AI for them to be able to solve this. Like, we're years and years and years away. In less than a year, it was 90% accuracy on these maths problems. And over again, he says, skeptics have claimed, oh, deep learning's not going to be able to do this. It's not going to be able to do X. It's not going to be able to do Y. And every time they've been proven wrong, but they've been proven wrong quickly. Like within a few months, He says now the hardest unsolved benchmarks they're giving these AIs are tests like the GPQA, which is like a set of PhD level biology, chemistry, physics questions. I got a couple of them to test us.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. if you want to go.
Here we go.
Yeah. Here's one for you. Let me put it up on the screen. Methylclipentanidine, which exists as a fluxional mixture of isomers, was allowed to react with methyl isoamyl ketone and a catalytic amount of pyrrolidine. A bright yellow cross-conjugated product, caninal hydrocarbon product formed with water as a side product. This product was then allowed to react with ethyl acrylate in a 1-to-1 ratio. Upon completion of the reaction, the bright yellow color had disappeared. How many chemically distinct isomers make up the final product? Not counting the stereoisomers, by the way.
Oh, my God. This is like, oh, wow.
So that's
what my undergrad majored in biochemistry. So I'm going to go with 8.
Well, I don't know what the answer is. But this is another example. I can't even read this one. This is quantum mechanics.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't touch that with a sample.
Krauss representations of the E state with all these complex equations.
The square root of 1 minus 3p over 4, A1 equals the square root of p over 4x.
No. So these are freaking hard, right?
Yeah, of course.
That's the point. Currently, PhDs who do this on average get 80% correct. Right now, you know, the Claude 3 LLM,
mm-hmm.
It gets 60% right. So it's almost already at a PhD level for these kinds of questions. And we're in 2024. Now, once you see where this is ramping up, it's going to become so clear that this is not, oh, you know, our kids are going to have to deal with this.
We're going to have to deal
with this.
This
is like the next couple of years.
Yeah.
And people need to be ready.
Well, you know, one thing that I've always thought about with the evolution of computing power, I remember years ago I had a teacher that said to me, oh, you know, by the time we're in the year, you know, 2006, we're only going to need to have 20% of the population to maintain our society, and the rest of the 80% will have to be entertained. So go into entertainment. Like, science teacher.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, go into entertainment. And I just
And that's what we did.
I know. I
mean, very successful.
I fell into entertainment. But in saying that at the same time, it's like, no, with this kind of stuff, I know that we joke, but it's not a joke. Like, you've already got Hollywood being terrified because of that that model that basically you put in a script
Sora.
And it generates it for you.
Text to video, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's
we
done.
Like,
actors are gone.
We
podcasters are gone.
Some of
musicians
that
are gone.
Earlier in the year, this
that's right.
This text
Sora.
Video AI, but there's various other competing models now.
There's Luma, I think. Is it Luma?
Luma just launched a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
There's also Kling, which is like a Chinese knockoff. I'll just play some of the videos, like a boy riding a bike. And it's very rudimentary now. It's kind of like what the image generation AIs were doing
initially
2 years ago.
Yeah. Mm.
But again, this is moving so rapidly, it's going to be indistinguishable from real 4K footage, in 12 months. Like, you can really see it moving that fast.
This is where it becomes quite terrifying, though, in the sense that there are a lot of conspiracy theories out there. I only just saw Dave Rubin the other day reporting on a former Pfizer, I think, scientist or something. He was claiming, and I don't know how valid this is, so I'm just reporting on what he was claiming. He was claiming that he insists that he is sure that the vaccines were deployed to inhibit fertility. Like, he was, I will find it.
What's that got to do with AI?
Well, think about it, right? If AI comes along and AI is just handling everything, like, it's, we're not going to need workers. So what happens to all these workers? What are we going to do with people? If
Oh, I see what you're saying. It's like a conspiracy that
population
there's going to be all these unwanted humans.
Yeah. And what was the saying? Wasn't it like, was it Klaus, good old Klaus from...
you'll feed and eats your bugs.
Yeah, well, you'll eat the bugs. And also that I think he called a lot of us useless mouths.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's like...
And he's probably correct.
Well, he's got that guy working with him who's connected to AI who is like trying to push us into transhumanism. We're not going to...
What's his name? Noah Harari.
Yeah, I can't remember who he is. But, the thing about it is that science teacher was like, oh, 80% of the world, you know, needs to be entertained. No, 80% of the world probably needs to be eradicated.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they believe. That's what they think. But that's not necessarily the people making these models. They're just hardcore nerds.
Yeah.
And this is an example on the screen. He's talking about the computational improvements just applied to the image models.
Mm.
So you got the base compute, which is a dog, but it's barely perceptible as a dog. You 4 times that computational power, you start to get a pretty accurate depiction of a photo of a dog. 32 times compute power, it's indistinguishable from a, you know,
almost
a photo.
Yeah.
Almost. Virtually indistinguishable. And he says that's what's been achieved over the last 4 years. We can achieve the same level of performance, though, with 100 times less computing power. Right?
Now.
Yeah, over those four-year period. So the next 4 years, he's like, it's going to be even more exponentially less computational power required.
Well, this is like that old saying about, you know, the computer power that it took to send man to the moon is now inside your iPhone.
Yeah, it's a similar kind of idea, but just on like a much more powerful, more rapid scale. And he says the possibilities, again, are enormous. Don't fall into the trap of thinking, oh, we're going to see like ChatGPT-6 in, you know, 2027. No, it's going to be, here's your replacement coworker in 2027.
Yep.
And then he talks about the three major problems right now, which he thinks are going to be solved in the coming years. So there's the onboarding issue where you introduce an AI and it's got to learn everything about the business and it takes months and months and months to do this. He claims this is going to be virtually instantaneous. They're going to be, you're going to have deliverable AIs that are going to be pre-onboarded for your company. So they've consumed every bit of literature about your company, every document, every video, everything the company's ever produced. It knows everything about your company, and then it's dropped in ready to do its job, ready to go straight away, hit the ground running. Number two, the test time compute overhang, which is basically what I said earlier, where you're chatting to a chatbot and it's like when you initiate the conversation, there's no context about anything else. It's just that conversation. We're now talking context will be there upon initiation of the chat.
Like a human being.
Like a human being. Like I start talking to you about F1 race cars, you immediately have, even though you're not necessarily a fan of F1, you know what they are. You have a general idea of what it is, a race. You know, you have all these built up knowledge that's there. AI doesn't have that yet, but he says this is inevitably solved in the next couple of years. And then the final one, which I found interesting, was using a computer. They'll just be able to use your computer the way you use your computer. So me right now operating OBS and like switching cameras and, you know, doing all this stuff.
It will know.
It will be able to do all of this. It'll be able to move the mouse. It'll be able to open your programs. It'll be able to drag things across. And he says people are going to have their minds blown in like 2026, 2027. This is right around the corner. And they're going to drop these AIs that can just freaking do your job on the computer immediately. He says, by the end of this, I expect to get something that just looks like a drop-in remote worker, an agent that joins your company, is onboarded like a new human hire, messages you and your colleagues on Slack, and uses your software, makes pull requests, gets on those big projects. It can do the equivalent of a human employee going away for a couple of weeks to work on a project, comes back, got all the information. It's going to be joining your Zoom calls, answering your emails. It's going to be
answering your phone.
Virtually, you're not going to meet them in the office and talk over coffee, but it's going to be indistinguishable from another coworker. And that is pretty close in the next 3 to 4 years. So he then goes through the computational, I'll just put some images up on the screen. I won't spend too much time going on this, but the point he's trying to hammer home, and I'm really just skimming the details here to give you an overall broad idea of what he's talking about, is just this insane jump. He says, if this is the intelligence gap we'll cover once more, where will this take us? He says, likely it will take us to models that can outperform PhDs and the best experts in the field. One way to think of this, it's kind of like a child, a human child, that learns and develops at 3 times the pace of a normal child. So if you think about that, how quickly do they go through school, right? You've got a teenager and they're learning at 3 times the pace of a normal human being. How quickly are they better than you at your job?
Well, obviously 3 times faster.
How quickly are they better than you at running the country? How quickly are they better than you at doing an innumerable amount of things.
And there we go. We have our second Evangelion reference for the show because they use a computer system called the Magi. It's 3 independent AI computers. They all make deliberations to control the city. They don't have a government. They essentially allow a computer to do it.
He says, we're on course for this in 2027. These AI systems will basically be able to automate all cognitive jobs. All jobs that can be done remotely will be performed by these And he calls them, they're going to be artificial general intelligence by 2027. It's a huge call. It's a massive call to say that this is coming this quickly. This is barely 2.5 years away. He says, we're racing through these orders of magnitudes and it requires no esoteric beliefs. He's saying, all I'm doing is extrapolating the trajectory that we've seen in the past 4 years. By 2027, we have to take this extremely seriously that this is going to be here. So then you got to think about these AI models are now going to automate AI research itself, right? So right now you've got all these smart guys in San Francisco and Silicon Valley doing all this research, building these models, making them smarter, making them more efficient. They're going to be replaced by the AI they're creating. And those AIs are going to be smarter than those guys. So you can start to see this curve. Where it,
look,
and I hate to sound like Ray Kurzweil, but it's clear that if it does continue this way, there is going to be this explosion. And this is where he says, when this AGI drops in 2027, it's nothing. He says, this is nothing. That's just the beginning. You know, we think about artificial general intelligence, you often think of some sci-fi movie concept where it's in some bunker somewhere underground, some giant supercomputer, and it's got a flashing red light and it's trying to murder you.
Well, see, Terminator 3, though, explained that to us, that it's not in a single location. It's everywhere.
Right. Yeah,
it's everywhere. Like, that was the, because I think, like, from a just the series or the concept, like, people were like, yeah, it's this one computer mainframe somewhere. No, it's everywhere.
Yeah, and this is the idea. You don't think of it as one thing. Think of a million of those.
Think of the internet.
Running on these GPUs. And then he's like, all the bottlenecks in the improvement of this AGI, of this intelligence, are going to be removed by those AGIs pretty quickly.
But isn't there something like, is it the von Neumann's principle where you're putting traffic between RAM and a CPU and that's the big bottleneck we have in computers at the moment? Like, do they think that AI will be able to get around that?
There's a lot of technical data in here, which I skipped over, but he does go into that. Right. I'm not going to go into it on the show, but he does address all those concerns and goes into them in detail. He's convinced they're not going to be an issue. He claims that there'll be like a decade's worth of algorithmic machine learning research and advancement done in a single year. And then that's going to...
So that 10 continue. Years will become 1 year, that 1 year will become 1 month.
Precisely.
That 1 month will become 1 week.
So this AGI that we're going to get in 2027, according to him, is just a taste of the super intelligence that's going to follow shortly after.
Look, I'm not saying we do this, but I think we break into one of these buildings after dark and then smash the chips and throw out this hand that we find and then blow the whole place up. It's just a suggestion.
You kind of look like Sarah Connor. You got that jawline, the Sarah Connor jawline. He says, with every generation before them, every new generation of models will dumbfound most onlookers. Like, we are going to be amazed by what's coming. They'll be incredulous when very soon models start solving incredibly difficult science problems that would take PhDs days. You'll be amazed when they're whizzing around your computer, writing code bases, millions of lines of code from scratch. And he says the economic value generated by these models will be 10x anything you can imagine. He says, forget sci-fi, count the orders of magnitudes. This is what we need to expect. AGI is no longer a distant fantasy. It won't be long before they're smarter than us. He's talking about like 100 times exponential advancement here.
So it begs the question then, and I'm sure you're going to get into it, but what then?
Okay, so going on from this, once we get the AGI and all these AGI models start working on more AGI, he says these AI systems are obviously going to become superhuman. Vastly superhuman. He says they will become qualitatively smarter than you or I, much smarter. It'll be like us to a preschooler now. Yeah. And once we get AGI, won't just have one AGI. You'll be able to run millions of them, perhaps 100 million human equivalents, all running at 10 times human speed. He says even if they can't walk around the office yet or make coffee, they'll be able to do machine learning research. Rather than a few hundred researchers and engineers at a leading AI lab, you've now got 100,000 of them now working furiously on algorithmic breakthroughs day and night. He says, before we know it, we will have super intelligence on our hands. And the power is going to be vast. Applying super intelligence to R&D and other fields, he says you can't see anything other than explosive technological progress across everything you can think of.
Hmm. That could be very exciting because, as I mentioned there, cold fusion before, I was actually serious. Like, one of the biggest debates we have in Australia at the moment is we are crazily pushing for net zero. And it's just like, it's with our technology at the moment, it's not there. Like, we're not there with the technology. If something like this comes along, the technology could be there.
Like, yeah.
But if we've got all this power that's emission free.
Dude, like, you can go to it. Like, once you need nuclear power plants to run these kinds of computations. But once you have that, you go, okay, solve cold fusion.
Yeah. We've come close with cold fusion. Like, we've come close. I don't think we've done it yet, but we are pretty close. Like, as a species.
Give me an anti-gravity craft.
Yeah, that would be different. That's, I mean.
Cure cancer.
Yeah. The medical, it would be incredible.
Once you start to think about the implications, if what he's saying is really going to be delivered, I'll actually give you a list. Like, he starts going through, imagine 100 million software engineers working on stuff, right? You're talking real automated AI researchers smarter than PhD levels. They'll be able to read every single machine learning paper ever written. They'll be able to have deeply thought about every single previous experiment ever run at a lab anywhere in the world ever. They'll learn in parallel from each of their copies, and they'll rapidly accumulate the equivalent of a millennia of experience. They'll be able to develop far deeper intuitions about machine learning than any human. So that's just for machine learning. They'll easily be able to write millions of lines of complex code, keep the entire code base in context, and spend human decades or more checking and rechecking every line of code for bugs and optimizations. They'll be superbly competent at all parts of the job. You won't have to individually train up each automated AI. Instead, you just teach and onboard one of them, then they just clone. So again, this idea of just having
a digital 100 monkey complex.
Yeah, just having like a million smarter than PhD researchers on a project. It's insane. And they'll work without a break, nonstop, peak energy, 24 hours a day. Vast numbers of automated AI researchers will be able to share context, enabling much more efficient collaboration. And of course, soon there'll be even smarter models, even more capable at this automated AI research. So again, it's just exponential. So we could go in just 1 year, he says, from the first AGI to this superintelligence. Now, this is what he expects to happen. Obviously, there'll be an AI capabilities explosion, which we've touched on a couple of things. But he also says robotics will be solved because currently he claims robotics is really a machine learning algorithms problem. And once you have the super intelligent AIs working on robotics, 90% of it is going to be solved.
Yeah, because we know the servo technology, we know the material science, none of that's a problem.
So
it's driving it.
He says inevitably factories will be run by swarms of robots.
Okay, again, we're back to Terminator. Because once it was turned on, it then started manufacturing its own killer death robots.
Yeah, I'll put a graph on the screen where he sees it going. See the exponentials on the y-axis?
Mm-hmm. Oh, this is the super intelligence.
Super intelligence, yeah. 10 to the power of 15 computational. This is comparing it to GPT-4. It'll dramatically accelerate scientific and technological progress. So the things we were talking about earlier. Like,
I want a transporter.
Free energy, diseases cured.
Beam me. I don't want to get my car. I want to be able to beam myself somewhere.
You probably could do that.
Yeah. Well,
aren't you Sarah Connor in this scenario? Aren't you trying to destroy it? Aren't you its mortal enemy?
I probably will try to destroy it, but in the meantime, if I could get a transporter, I'd be happy with that.
Well, he says this will be like going, airplanes aren't possible, that's a crazy pipe dream, to going to putting a man on the moon and then having ICBMs. Like, how long did that take us? Like 100
years?
80 years. He says that's going to happen in a year. That kind of progress in a year, every year. There'll be an industrial and economic explosion, he says. Like, imagine self-replicating robot factories covering the Nevada desert. It's just crazy, right? And here's one of the big ones I want to get into. Provide a decisive and overwhelming military advantage. See, we're already the effectiveness of drones in the war in Ukraine and Russia.
Mm-hmm.
He says we should expect completely new kinds of weapons, novel weapons of mass destruction.
Well, that's not good.
Things we can't even fathom. It'll be like 21st century militaries fighting 19th century brigades of horses. And it's the imbalance is going to be insane.
But this is, I can't recall the name of the guy, but only recently we're talking about it. There was a guy who was claiming that the AI could engineer a highly contagious virus, you know, biochemically engineer it and release it to the world and wipe out humanity. Could the AI do that?
Like, yeah, well, this is one of the ideas. He claims over the next couple of years, we're going to see one of these terrible scenarios play out, which is going to lead to the project, which I'll talk about later. And one of those is the idea that the AI will be smart enough to teach just, you know, your average chemist how to create from scratch a biological weapon of mass destruction.
Yeah.
And that can then be released.
Well, we have the genetic code for smallpox. I mean, you could just simply replicate that in a lab and away you go.
But yeah, again, the bottom line, he's talking industrial revolution scale change, but it's going to happen so rapidly, it's going to make that period of time. Like, what was the industrial revolution? Like, you know,
1800s.
1800s up until, you know, the early 1900s, rapid, rapid change. But he says this is going to be incredibly fast and the world is going to start going insane.
Yeah, because humanity doesn't handle change well.
It'd be like going through everything we did in the 20th century in a year. By the end of it, he says, super intelligent AI systems will be running our military. They'll be running our economy. During all of this insanity, we'd have extremely scarce time to make the right decisions. The challenges will be immense. It will take everything we've got to make it through this in one piece. So,
it's rather daunting.
He said, like, again, this analogy with the creation of the nuclear bomb, like back in the day, there were those guys that could see it coming. And they were saying, we've got to do something about it. Like, they could see it. And he says, among the senior scientists at the AI labs, they see this as inevitable. And we're at the point now where not many people are listening to them, right? So this is where I want to get into the infrastructure behind this, because you might be listening to this going, this is insane. Like, this is too sci-fi. This is crazy. Yeah, I've heard this kind of AI hype before. And it does sound like AI hype. We've all seen this stuff online of like people spruiking AI. And when you go in to use it, it's mildly helpful.
Yeah, at the moment, pretty much. There was one that you were telling me today. I don't know if it was a joke or not, but there was like, what was it? The AI system. And it wasn't an AI system. It was just some dude in India.
Yeah, there was this other post I saw today and it was a guy that's just so sick of the AI hype. And he's like, all these companies that aren't involved in AI or, you know, machine learning research, they're trying to incorporate AI into their companies because it's the hype thing right now. And they have no idea. He's like, they should be spending time trying to back up their databases properly. They can't even do that. But he said he went to this this demo, like it was some industry conference. It wasn't related to AI, but all the companies there were rolling out these AI models and AI systems for their companies. And he said because he had the technical knowledge, he got into some conversations with some of the engineers behind the stage, right? That's the way he termed it. And one of them was just like, they admitted, yeah, it's just an Indian guy.
Who, by 2027, will be replaced by an AI Indian guy.
It's just an Indian guy on a chat, and that's like the AI interface. You're just chatting with him. He's Googling the answer and then quickly typing it back to you. They said none of it worked. There was another company he spoke to, and they said, yeah, the AI thing we have, it doesn't actually work. It's just all smoke and mirrors. Like, it's not real. It's not really doing anything. So that's a whole other side of things. That's got to do. But again, this guy works for OpenAI. He's in the industry.
But there is so much fraud in this field. Like, after I saw CoffeeZilla's expose of the Rabbit Tech R1, and that little red device, it looks cool, looks great. It's next to useless. Like, it's next to, and there's all these reviewers that have tried to use this thing, and it just doesn't understand context. It just,
yeah, that, I mean, that's a good example of the AI hype.
Yeah. Right?
All these overpromises.
It's made a lot of money. I got refunded, but it's made a lot of money.
Yeah, overpromising and under-delivering. But let me talk about, perhaps if that what I'm talking about hasn't convinced you, maybe the build-up will convince you.
What do you mean by build-up?
Well, for example, we saw just last week that Nvidia is now the world's most valuable company. And the reason for this is they make the GPUs that power these models, that power these AI models. Their data centers are making billions and billions and billions of dollars. And they are just kicking ass. Their stock price, I mean, did you get in early on Nvidia?
No, I didn't.
I don't think I've got an image. Have I got an image of their stock price?
But that's basically a spike as well. Like, it's just gone.
Yeah, there it is.
Skyrocketing. I can't, there's another one in the image there.
That's on the screen there. NVIDIA stock price over the last 18 months. It's like hundreds of percent. I don't know the exact increase, but there's a massive graph on the screen there. And you might think, oh, it's too late. Like I missed the jump. But he's like, it hasn't even started yet.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. He's like, NVIDIA. NVIDIA might look expensive now. And he says, look, those of us who got in early are pretty happy. But this is nothing.
Mm-hmm.
This is absolutely nothing. So that's one thing. So the NVIDIA thing is interesting. And then he goes into the numbers. He claims that AI investment will be north of $1 trillion annually.
Annually?
By 2027. He says we're on the path to individual training clusters costing hundreds of billions by 2028.
Mm.
Clusters requiring power equivalency to a small, medium US state and more expensive than the US space station. By the end of the decade, we're heading to $1 trillion individual training clusters. So that means like an AI model that costs $1 trillion run in this huge data center powered by multiple power stations. NVIDIA shocked the world as its data center sales exploded. They went from $14 billion annualized to $90 billion annualized in the last year. $14 billion to $90 billion in a year. And then he's got this graph. Let me see if I can bring this up here.
Look at the power consumption.
Okay, so on the left, you've got the year. So we're going back to 2022. You've got these GPT-4 equivalent cluster, right?
Mm-hmm.
Back in 2022, you'd spend $500 million and you'd have 10,000 of these H100s. H100s are the NVIDIA GPUs that do the AI number crunching, right? That would take 10 milliwatts or megawatts, sorry, which is about to power it, which is like 10,000 homes. Jump ahead to, say, 2028. We're going three orders of magnitude beyond what we saw in 2022. You're talking data centers with 10 million of these GPUs, and it's going to cost hundreds of billions of dollars to acquire and run them. And they're going to take 10 gigawatts of power to run these models.
And that might, like, because it's 10, it doesn't seem like it's like 10 gigawatts is a small or medium US state.
That's like Pennsylvania. It's just an entire state worth of power. But then by 2040, you're going to see four orders of magnitude beyond this.
So is this watt hours, or is this like at any given moment, that's how much power this thing's drawing down?
I think this is annually.
Annually, okay.
I should check that actually. I'm not 100% sure, but you can read it in his full report.
Well, even so, 100 gigawatts.
Look, he's talking 100 million of these GPUs. 100 million of these GPUs in one of these data centers.
Greater than 20% of the US electricity production.
It'll cost you $1 trillion in cost to run this data center.
So that this must be where there comes a point where those self-teaching AIs get to a point where they work out how to solve the power consumption problem.
Yeah, well, I was looking at this, and especially where it's going to cost you like $1 trillion to run one of these AI models, and it's going to take 20% of the US's electricity production.
Is that even possible?
Yeah, I saw this and I'm like, okay, I'm out. Like, this doesn't make sense. This is not going to work. This is never going to happen. This is just a pipe dream. This is crazy, right? Not going to happen. And then I kept reading. They're already doing this. This is already happening.
How?
Okay, so the first one I want to point out, and he's got a list of these, is in January, CNBC reported that Zuckerberg just spent, where is it? He bought 350,000 of those H100 GPUs.
I don't know why he's bothering. No one uses Facebook anymore.
But they're already making their moves to acquire these and start building these facilities. Then you've got Amazon, right? So Amazon's next. Amazon, back in March, paid $650 million. They bought this 1 gigawatt data center. It's next to a nuclear power plant, right? So, because they know they're going to need that power.
And they're saying here, plans almost 1 gigawatt campus.
1 gigawatt campus. They're getting thousands, hundreds of thousands of these GPUs. They're planning for it as well. Then this rumor came out. Let me see if I can bring it up. Elon Musk unveils a groundbreaking development in Kuwait. They're constructing a secret gigawatt class GPU cluster. 700,000 B100 AI GPUs Now, the reason that they're building these in the Middle East is because power is very
cheap.
Plentiful,
yeah.
And it's very cheap. So this is 1.4 million. This is the rumor now that they're actually going to have not 700,000, but 1.4 million of these GPUs in this cluster. Then you head to, let me bring up another one here. Microsoft, OpenAI, plan a $100 billion data center project, according to the media. So this is currently a rumor. This is a $100 billion cluster. It's slated for operation in 2028. This is a comparable cost to the International Space Station. Like, this is insane amounts of money. And as each generation of models shocks the world, he says further acceleration may be in store. They're building these.
It has
this
to be
stopped.
Happening
right now.
It has to be stopped, and we can't stop it.
No, it's an arms race.
It has to be stopped.
You can't stop it. No one can stop this, because then your competitor will get the advantage. The biggest roadblock isn't money. It's actually power. Again, it's like getting enough power to power these 1 million GPUs running in your warehouse.
But surely, I mean, the amount of rare earth minerals that are being used and mined, like, we must be just completely raping the planet for this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's another question.
It's not good.
Like, I've been reading this wondering, do we even have the metal to build all this?
Yeah.
But he,
and
again,
how long do those chips last before they burn out?
Again, he's not the only person saying this. So AMD forecasted that by 2027, this AI market's going to be worth $400 billion, implying $700 billion plus of total AI spending, which is pretty close to the numbers that Leopold has brought up here.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Altman, the CEO of OpenAI, is saying that, okay, so this one's crazy. Altman and Microsoft are apparently trying to raise funds for a project that's going to be worth $7 trillion. $7 trillion to build out AI compute capacity. That's insane. A $7 trillion buildup. Like, what is going on? So he says one way or another, this scale up is happening. And when you go back to that graph I had earlier, where we're looking at these insane numbers of like warehouses filled with 100 million of these GPUs taking up like a state's worth of power. Well, they're freaking doing it.
How do they, this is the other thing, right? Like, how do they cool these things? Because you're going to have thermal pollution going on. One of the biggest problems you have near power plants is actual thermal pollution of the waterways. Like, it heats them up and it disrupts the environment.
Have you got your screen open there? Just ask GPT how to cool a giant warehouse full of 100 million GPUs.
Yeah, okay, good point.
He says, in any case, the exponential leap is in full swing right now. It's happening right now. He said in the old days, artificial general intelligence was considered a dirty word. It's like, oh, this is science fiction stuff. He said, some colleagues and I used to make theoretical economic models of what the path might look like to reach it. He said, now though, like, it seemed far off, but now it's here. Like, the time has come. He says 2023 was the AI wake up moment. Behind the scenes, he says, the most staggering techno capital acceleration has already been put into motion. It's already being built. It's already here. Brace for the G-forces, he says. Now, this is where he expands out into some geopolitical stuff. I won't spend too much time on this, but in a nutshell, he's like, all right, it's clear that this AGI and the superintelligence that follows is going to be the United States. It's going to be their most important national defense secret. That's why he keeps making this allegory to the atomic bomb. It's going to be their most valuable asset, their most powerful weapon, their most powerful economic factor. It's going to be pretty much everything.
Is that his subtle way of saying that they've already done it or they're already doing it?
No, but this is him saying it needs to have the same kind of security you would see for the B-2 bomber.
The Manhattan Project.
You would see for the Manhattan Project. But he's saying what the reality is, it's basically like startups in San Francisco that have, like, they talk about everything at a party.
Yeah.
Like the cleaner can come in with a USB stick and steal everything. And not to
and
go-
that cleaner just happens to be Chinese.
Yeah, and not to go into in too much detail, but he has a bunch of quotes from people on the inside who are like, there's absolutely no way this isn't already happening.
What, that it's being stolen by foreign adversaries? Of course it is. It happens here in Australia.
He's got this quote from, his name's Mark Andreessen. He's, involved with the development of this stuff. He says, my own assumption is that all of these American AI labs are already fully penetrated by China.
Yep.
And the CCP is getting nightly downloads of all the American AI research and code right now.
Yep.
It's happening right now. So he says, by the time the decade is out, we'll have billions of vastly superhuman AI agents running around, and we'll have given up, he says, as in we, America, we'll have given up this massive technological advantage because the secrecy is there. Now, this is starting to make sense as to why we're seeing headlines like this. This is from the Washington Post. OpenAI adds Trump-appointed former NSA director to its board. So this is OpenAI that runs ChatGPT. They've hired the former NSA director. Now, people have looked at this and gone, oh, well, this is they're just stealing our data. Like, we saw this coming. AI is just hoovering up our data, and it's all for, you know, domestic spying. It's like, well, yeah, obviously, yeah, that's true. But also,
it wasn't Millie.
Yeah, but also, but also, this is totally required.
Of course it
is. They have to do this.
Yeah, of course it is.
Anyone paying attention would be saying, why is this only happening now? And this is where we get into the project. Like, he talks about, you know, the warfare implications. You know, we touched on that briefly. You know, think what we've seen in the war in Ukraine with drones blowing up soldiers. Think about that on a mass scale with, like, self-replicating machines, like just basically Terminator.
Well, I recall in the past, right, we've contemplated this over the years, and it was always, like, said that if this is ever developed, the biggest thing that comes to the military is at what point do you allow a lethal robot to make the decision to kill? Like, it's always been said that, you know, we're in control. We're the ones that finally press the button. Like, we pull the trigger, but it's a button. Like, we're the ones doing it. There comes a point where they give that up. And it seems like we're already there. Like, it's the AI making the decision to kill.
Yeah, it's a good question. And there's a couple of things to that. I mean, number one would be you make that decision when your enemy does that. Like, as soon as your enemy makes that decision, you make that decision.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's one aspect of it. The other aspect, which we haven't really touched on, and this is an important thing, is that when these super intelligences start building their own stuff, right, they start improving on themselves, we can't assume they're going to use the same code that we've developed as humans.
Good point. So we won't even understand the language they're using.
They'll create something else that is beyond our comprehension. It'll be far beyond our comprehension. It'll be completely alien to us. And that's why there's this huge problem with this division that Leopold is in. Again, going back to this super alignment idea that these companies have these divisions that try and keep AI in line. How do you keep something in line if you can't understand anything it's doing because it's beyond your comprehension?
You can't. It's literally a Pandora's box. Well, not literally. It's figuratively, but it does become a Pandora's box because you will unleash this monstrosity that you will never be able to put it back in the box.
It would be like your three-year-old trying to keep your day-to-day activities in check.
Yeah.
Right? It's just, it's not going to happen. It's impossible. So there's this whole discussion around this is too broad for this show, but it's, some of the ideas are, well, we create AIs that we can understand that can find issues with the super AIs.
But the super AIs will just wipe them out and fool them.
I know, it's just crazy, right? It's these insane extrapolations of where this goes. One example I quickly want to mention because I think it's just fun and cool. Remember Palmer Luckey?
No, remind me.
So Palmer Luckey, he invented the Oculus Rift. When was that? Back in 2013 or 30? Something? In the year 2010s, Palmer Luckey, where is he? That's his wiki there. So he invented the Oculus Rift VR device and then he sold it to Meta or sold it to Facebook for a large amount of money. What's Palmer Luckey up to these days?
AI.
Palmer Luckey's up to? Yeah, he's into AI, but very specific AI. For the military.
Oh, dear.
Palmer Luckey and his company Anduril is building, like what I've been describing, these automated drone systems powered by this complex AI software. And it's freaking cool. Like it's hard not to go, this is cool. Let me just play a quick video of some of the stuff that they're developing. This is one of their Pulsar drones.
What the hell is this?
This is the Pulsar
first of its kind.
Multifunction AI-enabled thing. Just like this crazy robot you'd see in a Metal Gear game. Onboard GPUs, AI-enabled radio frequency machine learning. Senses the spectrum in real time.
Rapidly adapt to emerging threats. Or leveraging AI to rapidly adapt to emerging threats.
This is the kind of stuff that is just going to go bananas over the next couple of years.
It says they're detect and deny. So is it some type of incoming missile defense system?
I'll bring up a cooler one. This is one of their little portable anti-missile defense systems called the Roadrunner.
Twin turbojet autonomous air vehicle.
If you're listening to the audio, it kind of looks like a little model rocket.
It does,
made of carbon fiber. It's got its own
little box. It's
got its own little nest, fully AI controlled, fully automated.
And what the top just kind of opens up, and oh my god, it does! This thing shoots out of it.
This thing is so crazy.
That is cool. I did this for my in-laws.
So it launches into the air.
I'm assuming it's to prevent incoming targets, right?
Yeah, well, you see it going high subsonic speeds and it's about to blast an incoming plane or missile, I think.
That is really cool. And it's doing it all by itself. This is the important thing. There's no one flying it.
Yeah. Here comes the jet. I just want to play this because it's cool. It's like...
No, but it's actually also terrifying.
Got him! Boom, there we go.
And this thing, what I'm assuming, just flies home?
Yeah, then just go, well, it exploded there.
If it doesn't explode.
Otherwise, it just explodes. But this is the kind of stuff, I mean, the reason these guys are winning contracts is because they're like, this is all AI.
Because the military industrial complex is big business.
It's the software. Anyone can build a drone.
That's what's driving all of this in the background as well. It is the military.
Yeah, so going back to this Washington Post headline of the NSA director going to OpenAI, inevitable and necessary, I say. And this is where we get to the project. Like, what does America do about this? Well, he says, I find it insane that the US government will let a random San Francisco startup develop superintelligence. Imagine if we had developed atomic bombs by letting Uber just improvise. He says, superintelligence AI systems, much smarter than humans, will have vast power, from developing novel weaponry to driving an explosion in economic growth. Superintelligence will be the locus of international competition, a lead of months potentially decisive in military conflict. And he says, like many scientists before us, the great minds of San Francisco hope that they can control the destiny of the demon they are birthing.
I don't want Silicon Valley making decisions for humanity. They have already stuffed us up enough. Could you imagine if they are unleashing, they will have no morality. It will be completely.
Well, this is why it's not going to continue this way. He says in the next few years, the world's going to wake up.
Is it though?
The national security state will realize what's at stake and history will make a triumphant return. He says there'll be a moment, it's a year or two away, where it'll be clear we're on the cusp of this artificial general intelligence, this super intelligence, and the US government will have to create the program, the project. So this is
another.
I don't
believe that. They can't even regulate crypto properly. They can't even keep their borders secure.
What's crypto compared to what I'm describing? It's nothing.
No, my point is, it's not about, no, but crypto is a big deal, right? They can't regulate it. They can't. Like, they've stuffed it up. There's all these problems. They're going to regulate AI?
I don't see why not. I don't see why not. I mean, what do you do to regulate it in the United States? You take control of the private companies that are creating this.
Hang on. The government is going to take control of private companies. So what, they're going to take control of Amazon, Microsoft, Google, OpenAI?
Yes.
It's not going to happen. I guarantee you that is
not going
to happen.
Well, they're going to take control of the AI development. Well, the alternative is, like I said earlier,
it's too late.
Is Uber being responsible for this.
Yeah. And then we have, in March of next year, the Kali Yuga change.
No, I honestly think that he's on the money. I think that the Pentagon's going to wake up. And like I said, they're already doing it. Why has OpenAI hired the former NSA director? They're already doing it. This is already happening. This is not, like, the US government has to do this. They have no choice.
I hope so. I genuinely hope so, because I go back to what I said before. I don't want Uber designing these things for us, but I just don't see it happening. I think it's the cat's already out of the bag. You know, it's gone.
Well, let me just leave you with his final thoughts, because he says at the end, you know, all of this is starting to feel very, very real. He says a few years ago, you know, I took these ideas seriously, but he said, they were abstract. They were quarantined in models. They were probability estimates. Yeah. He said, now it feels extremely visceral. He says, I can see it. I can see how this AGI will be built. It's no longer about estimates of human brain size and hypotheticals and theoretical extrapolations and all that. He says, I can basically tell you the cluster AGI will be trained on, what it will be trained on, and when it will be built. The rough combination of algorithms we'll use, the unsolvable problems and the path to solving them, and the list of people that will matter. He says, I can see it. It's visceral. But the scariest realization, he says, is that there is no crack team coming to handle this. He says, as a kid, you have this glorified worldview that, you know, the professionals are in charge. The experts are in charge.
Well, after the last few years, we know that the experts are not people that you can trust.
And many people still think that way in terms of the government and bigger industry and science. But he says, it's not like that. The world is incredibly small. When the facade comes off, it's usually just a few people behind the scenes who are the live players, who are desperately trying to keep things from falling apart. He says, right now, there's a few hundred people in the world who realize what's about to hit us, who understand just how crazy things are about to get, who have situational awareness, which again is the title of his essays. He says, I probably either personally know or am one degree of separation from everyone who could plausibly run this project, he says, is inevitable. The few folks behind the scenes who are desperately trying to keep things from falling apart are you and your buddies and their buddies. And he's addressing this to the AI researchers. He's like, that's it. That's all there is. There's no one coming in to rescue us. He says, someday it will be out of our hands, but right now, at least for the next few years, the fate of the world rests on these people. Will the free world prevail?
Well, it feels like it's all falling on deaf ears, and it's a pointless exercise anyway, because once it does get loose by itself, it doesn't matter if there's a program and you've got it all locked down and the US government is in control of it. Once it is self-aware and it starts building itself,
well, there's something I want to leave you with as we close out this free edition of the show and close out this season of MU. I think some people did see this coming, and that's Rudolf Steiner on the screen there. He gave a lecture in Switzerland in May of 1921. It was entitled A Picture of the Earth's Future Development. And Steiner had unique, remarkable abilities to predict based on his spiritual insight. And, you know, you say what you want about these kinds of occult esoteric sources, I think sometimes they're on the money. And this is what he said back in May of 1921. He said, from the earth will arise a terrible race of beings, in character midway between the mineral and plant kingdoms, as robotic beings of extreme intense and logical intellect. They will spread and take hold of the earth, overlaying it as with a web of terrible spiders, spiders of enormous wisdom, whose organization does not, however, even reach the level of plants. These terrible spiders will interweave and intermesh with each other, imitating in their movement all that human beings have conceived with their shadowy intellect, without allowing it to be inspired by a new imagination. Just stop for a moment there and listen to that. All that human beings have conceived with their intellect, this is what these beings will use. That is AI. It doesn't have original thought.
It doesn't
come up with its own concepts. It takes our already learned knowledge,
exceptionally intelligent,
and calculates it. And he says, without allowing it to be inspired by a new imagination. He says, all unreal human thoughts of this kind will assume the reality of being. The earth will be covered with terrible mineral plant type spiders, which will spin very rational interconnections with each other. So this is the AI's networking, but with malevolent intention. And the human being will have to merge his being with these terrible spider creatures.
Well, that's, think about it. That's how we'll keep up for a period, is it will become like the Borg and have computers implanted within us to allow us to synaptically interface with these machines so that we can at least keep up briefly.
Yeah, I mean, that's a possibility. I don't necessarily think he's talking about literal cyborgs. But if you think about the way our society will be transformed, you will have no choice but to incorporate what he's describing
into
your life.
What is Musk doing, though? What, Neuralink?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, yeah. Putting it in
your
brain. How
many people will just sign up for it? You look at, like, Worldcoin is a great example. They're scanning your retinas and all these, like, it's such a bad, dangerous thing. It's like leading to this whole, you know, online ID thing. And people just lined up. They'll do exactly the same with this.
There's another later quote where he says, humanity will seek with this union with the spider race and certain groups and their underlying spiritual forces or influences are conscious allies to tie down a segment of humanity in this way. So in other words, there are human factions that understand this precisely.
And Sarah Connors of the world.
They're driven. No. Listen,
he says
there's certain groups and their underlying spiritual forces, they're conscious allies to tie down humanity in this way.
Oh, these are globalists.
So there's a faction of humanity that understands this technology. They're working to use it to oppress humanity. But remember, Steiner says behind those factions, there are spiritual forces. So I'll leave it there. There are more quotes from Steiner. Maybe I'll read you another one in the Plus extension when we come back. Because Steiner even said that this will come from America. He was very explicit where this was going to come from. And yeah, that's a wrap for this free season of MU. I'll link to everything in the show notes.
It's an ominous warning though, isn't it? Like it's really terrifying. I mean, Crowley tried to warn us as well, but he just ended up molesting it. So, you know, he forgot about it.
The funny thing is like all of this comes from this guy, Leopold Aschenbrenner, but he just looks like a gamer on YouTube. Like he looks like PewDiePie 10 years ago.
Well, I mean, look shouldn't be give you any indication as to a person's motivations or intelligence.
No, I read his entire thing. I'm fairly convinced he's onto something. So I'll link to his work and I'll link to the essay Situational Awareness in the show notes. Have a read. Let me know what you think. I'll also link to all those news stories where he basically connects the dots that show that this is being built and it's right around the corner. So we are on the cusp, if we survive the Kali Yuga, of a serious revolution in the way our world functions. That's coming up. We've got more coming up, even though this is the wrap for the free season. That's it. We'll be back. What's the date again? 5th of July?
5th of July.
5th of July, we'll be back for the free edition of MU and 2nd of July for Plus members. Coming up in the Plus extension, though, there's more.
Forest Freaks. We're going to go into the faceless Forest Freaks. We're going to be exploring some of these stories around the globe of people interacting with what appear to be potentially they're ghostly apparitions, but they're not. They're something else. And they seem to be connected to trees and elemental phenomena. So all that is coming up in the Plus.
I love how this is just going to pair with the AI info.
It's so total opposite. It's complete opposite, which is good. I think we need like a, I don't know, like a sorbet refresher after that. That's just like a palate cleanse.
Yeah.
It's depressing, the whole AI stuff. But we'll talk. I want to talk about the AI just a little bit at the start.
Oh, well,
in the Plus.
So a refresher is faceless freaks leaping out of trees.
That's right.
To attack us.
Yes.
In the night. Yeah. Okay.
But much better than AI.
That's a wrap for this season. Thank you so much for watching and listening. If you're on Plus, stick around for the great stuff after the break. For everyone else, sign up. MysteriousUniverse.org/Plus. Sign up today. Get access to the big extensions we do every single Friday. And of course, if you're a Plus member, you get an entirely exclusive show that comes out on Tuesday. MU Max members get access to our entire back catalog as well. Sign up today, mysteriousuniverse.org/plus. Help support your favorite show. We'll be back with you in a couple of weeks. If you're on Plus, though, stick around for the great stuff after the break. Welcome back to your Plus extension. Great to have you with us.